This is a tape on a process known as SOP-8D, as distinctly opposed to SOP-8C. The reason I'm giving you this at this time is because the investigation reports and so forth are all in now on D. And D stands for nothing except it's in sequence to SOP-8C. Of course, to a lot of pre-clears who intended to hold on to their case, it'll probably stand for damn. The modifications which I'm going to give you here are simply included in the material which I'm going to give you here. Rather than tell you the changes over C, I'm simply going to give you SOP-8D, just in so many words. The first we would have would be opening procedure. Opening procedure would be run in this fashion. You have the pre-clear, locate spots in space while he is walking around the room and looking around the room. You get him up to a point of tolerance on a spot in space. That spot can be in relationship to anything. It can be as tiny or as large as he seems to make it, but when you finally have finished with SOP-8D opening procedure, your individual is able to spot a spot in space down to a pinpoint without either holding it with his finger or pointing to it or anything else. He is able to keep his attention, in other words, stably upon messed space. Now, in order to do this, he can use his own messed body's eyes. And there is the essential difference. We at least get him to a point where he can direct this body to observe space. Very good. That's the primary thing there would be there. Naturally, in the process of doing this, you establish a two-way communication with the pre-clear. You discuss things with him, and as soon as you have completed locating spots in space, now let's test his communication lag. But if you have had a great deal of trouble getting him to locate spots in space, and if you're not very successful in getting him to locate spots in space, let's give him the next to the last list of self-analysis. Remember something real, and so forth, and go over that, and then have him locate some spots in space. This gives him a little more havingness. If you recognize the next to the last list, self-analysis, remember something real, and so forth, actually gives him a certainty on the fact that there was a yesterday. He can have something. He can have yesterday. You're asking him for things he can have, that's all. Remember something real. Now he can have an incident. If he could have enough past incidents, he might make up his mind that he could also have a present incident. And that's why that process works. Your pre-clear, who is having this trouble, is certainly having present time trouble. He's having present time trouble for the excellent reason that he has insufficient havingness to have anything real. He can't have anything that's sitting right around him. There's his difficulty. Very well. We go then immediately into step one, SOP-8D, and step one, SOP-8D, goes in this fashion. You ask the pre-clear to be 3 feet back of his head. If he is, we continue right on down the line. In other words, we just don't do any more step one. Ask him to be 3 feet back of his head. Okay, so he's 3 feet back of his head. If he isn't 3 feet back of his head, then we go right on down the line just the same. In other words, there's no particular change here. You know, it doesn't matter whether he is or is not back of his head then in step one. Step one simply in SOP-8D asks him to be 3 feet back of his head, and that is the total and entire step. If he isn't 3 feet back of his head, you would naturally go to step two, wouldn't you? And if he is 3 feet back of his head, you go to step two. In other words, you wouldn't even have to know whether or not the pre-clear stepped 3 feet back of his head or not to run the process. Because that's what 8D does, and that is one of the main things it's aimed toward. It's let's get over the bridge of auditor criteria on whether or not the preclear has exteriorized. Let's put it into the so what category. Because believe me, when you get through with this process, your preclear is going to be exteriorized. I'll give you a little anecdote about that. Over in England, they've invented something called a white five. Of course, this tape will be played over in England, so they shouldn't consider that we feel England is back of us here in Phoenix. Matter of fact, it isn't more than a week or two, mostly because a great many of these tapes and so forth are immediately shipped to Great Britain. This White 5, of course, is something that's been invented by your stuck-in case. This person who is stuck in is being a body, and a body always has to make something. Now, the guy who is stuck in says to somebody, be 3 feet back of your head. Of course, he's just got through making nothing. This is intolerable to him, so he's got to make something of it. So he has to really invalidate the preclear or do something strange or peculiar and figure out a new lot of figures and say, well, if anybody did exteriorize in the meshed universe space, this would automatically mean he was obviously a computing psychotic, at least. In other words, a body is dedicated to the proposition that all and everything should make at all times something, that there should be something there. And the preclear, who is in a body, who is stuck in, is trying to make something, and his effort to make something will, of course, mean at the very least that he wants the preclear to be there as something. So he wants the body and the thetan or anything else that is this preclear to be sitting in that chair. He doesn't want it over the hills and far away. That would be the impulse. This is strictly on the basis of the communication graph. Now let's take the other side of this. An individual who is exteriorized rather obsessively would never rest, really, until he had reduced that body that's sitting in front of him there to practically nothing. You see, he wouldn't pay much attention to exteriorization either. He'd simply see that the body remained sitting there after 5 minutes of auditing, and this he would take as an affront. Because, of course, obsessively, an exteriorized individual who is not theta cleared would attempt to make nothing. That would be his goal. So he also would invalidate an exteriorization. He wouldn't care about that exteriorization. He'd find himself still confronted with the body, and he would react to try to knock this body to pieces if he possibly could. Let's run enough engrams to knock the body to pieces. The stuck-in auditor would have rather a tendency to add enough engrams in incidents to the case to make the body a little thicker, if anything, and a little more dense. So between these two arguments, you get a lot of argument about exteriorization. You could invent such things as white fives, and do people who really exteriorize, yap, 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 yap. This argument, you must recognize as an auditor, stems totally out of the process of communication which requires that a duplication take place. An individual speaks at the comm point, C, and speaking from this comm point, he expects whatever he is to be duplicated at E on the effect line. And so we have a problem when we have a problem in this, we get ourselves beautifully involved, because if a preclear exteriorized, the auditor who was stuck in would want him stuck in. If the auditor is exteriorized, he would not see that he could do the preclear any good whatsoever while the preclear remained interiorized. And both of these assumptions are not true. You can do a preclear an awful lot of good without ever exteriorizing him. In fact, you can do more for a preclear at this time than you ever could with Dianetics without ever exteriorizing him. You see that? You can do more for an individual at this time with these processes than you ever could with Dianetics. Believe me. 8D, if he just never exteriorized at all, would at the very least turn on his sonic visio rather rapidly. So it's a case to a large degree of so what as far as step one is concerned. But just because we're taking the pressure off where the general public is concerned of exteriorization, don't you take the pressure off in auditing and say, well, he's inside, it's all right. No, you're a professional auditor. It's not all right if your preclear's inside. What the hell's the matter with you? Audit him out where he belongs, not sitting in the middle of a whole bunch of engrams. Because you can reduce engrams forever. The thetan, regardless of what else he's doing, is going to sit there trying to make nothing out of engrams that are all around him. And he'll chew and chew and chew and chew and chew until he's finally out of there. He doesn't care if he has to make 18 holes in the head. All right. So, however, just for purposes of publication, We have, step one, has be 3 feet back of your head. Now, you can discuss this point with him if you want to. And be sure that you go over this bridge. When he says, what do you mean, and so forth, recognize something. You're dealing with somebody who is being a body. And he says, what do you mean? In any brief instant, if he wants an explanation or anything of the sort, you're just dealing with somebody who's being a body. Now, there isn't any sense in doing anything more about it than that. This person has his reasons for being a body, believe me. But the funny part of it is a lot of these boys who are being a body do exteriorize if you simply say, well, let's try it. And then they're quite surprised. So let you, on a professional level, put that little step in there. The fellow has a little protest. You see that he's not bunged up. He's not very old. She is in good condition, relatively. And you know this person should exteriorize. Well, let's not just skid over it that fast. Let's at least ask a couple of more questions. Are you there? And so forth. But if he starts to give you any kind of an argument, you just go on step two. Now, what do we do with step two? Step two is the same type of step as always. Except we do it a little bit different. We ask him to be 3 feet back of his head, and so we ask him to get a mock-up of his environment and duplicate it many times. And then get a nothingness and duplicate it many times. And that's step two. Now, of course, perforce, asking him to get a mock-up of his surroundings. By the way, many preclers don't savvy. They don't dig this word. Most people, you know, most people out on the street have a vocabulary of about 1,000 words. After they've been through the university, they have a vocabulary of about 400 words. That's their common speaking vocabulary. So you want to recognize that it is actually better communication for you to speak colloquially rather than pedantically. There's nothing wrong, you see, with pure English. As a matter of fact, however, the purest English is the simplest English. The most accomplished vocabularist of the last half century was a fellow by the name of O. Henry. You find no big words in O. Henry's works. Not a single big word sits there anywhere. And yet you know he is using more words than the most complex writer of German philosophy. He's using more words. He had a greater command of simple words. If you have an idea, by the way, that your speaking vocabulary is as great as you know big words, take another thought. Your speaking vocabulary is as big as you know words in general. And there are actually many more simple words than there are complex words. So when you're pre-clear, box, at doing something, you check this about you. What'd you do? What'd you give him in terms of command? Did you say, would you please exteriorize into the immediate environment and duplicate the masses and bulks of the vicinity? He's saying, what the hell? He's already groggy, or he wouldn't be sitting there as pre-clear. Don't make him more groggy. You say, how about being 3 feet back of your head, bub? All right. Take a look at the surroundings, room, so forth. You know, surroundings. And get another picture of it. Now get a lot more, one at a time, a lot more. In other words, make your auditing commands comprehensible. It's very easy to have an auditing command be comprehensible if you know what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, you can just have an awful time with auditing commands. But don't ever interrupt a communication line by making it necessary for the pre-clear to ask you to explain whether you're using English or Russian. See that? That's a communication break. So let's say, be 3 feet back of your head. Your next immediate statement would be, okay, take a look at your surroundings, duplicate it. You could slow this down, you see. You say, take a look at your surroundings, get a duplicate of it. Follow it right up immediately with what you mean by duplicate. Because you can use this word duplicate as an easy communication word. So define it for him. All right, take a look at your surroundings. Now, get a duplicate of it. That is to say, get another picture just like it. Okay, now get another picture just like the first one. And another one. Duplicate it again. Another one. See, you're teaching him English right now. See? And as you utter it, your preclear comes into possession of immediate and swift command words without any further argument. You're clever, you see, if you do this. You say the word you want to use for a communication word, and then you define it in other terms. If your preclear is extraordinarily stupid, give him the thing about six different ways, one right after the other. Don't even ask for him to ask back. You just keep explaining. All of a sudden, he looks kind of relieved. You know you've driven it through. So that'd be the next step. Well, that's not necessarily the best thing to have happen to somebody who's just been exteriorized. Mind you, if you told him to look at the body directly, he'd probably pop right back in. So you don't direct his attention to the body. But it's perfectly all right to direct his attention to the surroundings. If he also includes the body in his surroundings, fine. You're really in there. You're doing that. Because sooner or later, he's going to have to get mock-ups of his body. Sooner or later. But you just say, duplicate your surroundings. All right. So he does. So his body gradually then takes its beingness in those surroundings, too. How many duplicates do you let him run on something like this? Doesn't matter. I'd say 25, 20, something like that. And remember to have him duplicate nothing, because you've just asked him to duplicate something. Well, if you've just asked him to duplicate something, this is not a perfect communication for a thetan. And this is the trouble he's having. He's a nothing, you see, which is trying to communicate with a something. You'll find out it's with considerable relief and considerable communication change, by the way, that he duplicates nothing. Now you've said duplicate your surroundings. All right, get another picture just like that. All right, another one, another one, another one, another one. He says, well, it's all black. Oh, you're wasting your time. Go on to step three, see? But as long as he could get a glimmering of anything, you had him duplicate it. And the second that you had him duplicate this, you ask him then, now, all right, can you find a nothingness around any place? There is a nothingness, something and so forth. Find that nothingness. Okay, all right. Now, get another nothingness just like that alongside of it. Now, make another nothingness right alongside of that. Now, duplicate it again. Now, duplicate it again. Now, duplicate it again. Until you make him duplicate nothing several times. However, if he's protesting and it's all black, it's rather senseless to ask him to duplicate nothing. This would be a silly thing to do. So we go on immediately to step three, space. You see, we're still following this same old SOP 8 pattern. You don't have to relearn anything. This is just a fast way to dive in. And the most effective thing we can do. All right. Step three. Now, we're quite well aware of the fact that an individual can hold the two back corners of the room and pop out of his head and be in good shape. We're quite well aware of the fact that this can take place. We know this can take place. An individual who's pretty badly stuck in his body and so forth will quite often just flip out on holding the two back corners of the room. So actually, we don't dare take that step out of there. This individual has exteriorized. He hasn't exteriorized. We still ask him to hold the two back corners of the room. By this time, you should have discovered whether or not you're dealing with an occluded or perception difficulty case. If you're dealing with an occluded or perception difficulty case, you ask him to do this minimally. You don't ask him to do very much of this. You see that? So we say, all right, hold the two back corners of the room. He does. We explain how he does that. We let him sit there for a minute or two, at least a minute. You know, and I mean a 60-second minute, not a colloquial minute. Colloquial time is something we're not using. You just let him sit there at least 60 seconds. Sometimes you as an auditor might get a little bit impatient. Look at your watch when you ask somebody to hold the two back corners of the room. You'll swear he's been holding it for 2 hours and he's only been holding it for 5 minutes. If you just had him sit there for a long time, you know, and hold the two back corners of the room, he'd come out of it. Sooner or later, somewhere down the line, I don't know, 80 hours from now or something. But he'd come out of it. Why do you do this at this time? Well, you just ask the individual to do a lot of duplication. See, you ask him to duplicate the surroundings and so forth, and you probably disoriented him a little bit in terms of present time. So let's do this, if the case exteriorized, just to pull him back up into present time. See? Now, let's have him do this also to give him some stability in his environment for the next horrible thing you are going to do with him, which is step four. But you're going to do another thing here with step three before you let him out of it. Hold two back corners of the room. He's going to hold those for at least a minute, 2 minutes. You're going to ask him to spot some spots in space. You're going to put it this way. Spot some spots in space where you are not, for sure. That's always a good phrase to use. So hold two back corners of the room. Okay, let go. Now, let's spot some spots in space where you're not. You see, this guy can already spot space. You're not dealing here with a guy who's completely in the dark. Why? Because you ran opening procedure until he could spot space. So this is nothing new or strange that you're asking him to do. But you are asking him to do it with him in a different situation. He is probably exteriorized. 50% of the people, when they get to that point, will be exteriorized. The other fellow will be spotting the spots in space this time with his eyes closed. Because you'll make sure they're shut. Slight difference. See that? Spots in space. By the way, you have him let go. When you ask somebody to hold the two back corners of the room in group processing or something, have them let go before you continue with your processing. Got that? So what's that step consist of? Well, actually, these are the two essentials of space, tolerance of space, and two anchor points. And there could be an awful lot more to the whole field of spaceation, and you know a lot more about spaceation than I've just mentioned in step three, but we're not going to bother with all this at this time. And we're not, because step four is probably going to kill the preclear anyway, and you don't want to waste any time. With step four, we enter into havingness. If you have a preclear who is having any difficulty in perception, your preclear is having difficulty in havingness. He's having difficulty in duplication and in havingness. Well, it figures out this way. A preclear who's having difficulty with communication is having difficulty with duplication. Now get this. He is refusing to duplicate a person. This is all that's wrong with him. He's refusing to duplicate a person. And if he is refusing to duplicate a person, it's probably because he has a havingness problem with that person. It just works out that way. He's refusing to duplicate a person, and in his opinion, this other person will own everything there is. I call your attention to Scientology 8008 and the problems relating to ownership and protection. A fellow starts in protecting something and finally winds up as a total protection. He owns it. Well, when he loses it, after he's gone through this cycle, he, of course, experiences loss and his perception goes to pieces, but gloriously. So what do we got here? Very interesting. That this person is in a universe of somebody who owns everything. See, that'd be the most powerful universe there was. He is in the universe that owns anything. In other words, to have anything, he's got to be in this universe that owns everything. And that's actually his story with the meshed universe, isn't it? God owns everything. So he's in this universe. He doesn't have anything himself. God owns it. The day you find and bring in a religious person who is not an occluded case, I will give you a small medal, a medal of the Sacred Heart. Pardon me, the Sacred Engram. The day you find a very religious person who is not an occluded person, let me know. God owns everything. Therefore, we have our first problem in universes. Why don't we just tackle universes then, just head on? No, we're going to leave that back with advanced course procedure. We're still going to leave tackling universes in the hands of the professional auditor. But we're just going to change the dickens out of this 8C right at that step 4. You see, it hasn't altered much up to the point of step 4. Altered a little bit in opening procedure. Got a little bit shorter in steps 1, 2, and 3. But when we got to step four, the world fell in. Step four, big change. There is this which must now take place regardless of who your preclear is or how well they're exteriorized or anything else. You're going to take your little e-meter by the hand and you're going to find out who owns everything. The very fact that this individual is sitting in your auditing chair being audited tells you immediately whether they exteriorized, interiorized, or anything else, whether they're occluded, precluded, or oculated. It just doesn't matter. If they're sitting in the auditing chair, they're having a problem in havingness. And they're not seeing things straight when they get outside. Let's just put that down in the book. If they're in an auditing chair in any way, shape, or form, they're not seeing as well as they could see. There is a difficulty with this case in havingness. Because if they're in this universe, they're having a difficulty with havingness, which at least close terminals with this universe. So let's break down now the aristocracy of the step one. The step one ought to be able to see everything much better than he sees it and with greater reality than with his messed eyes. The messed eyes actually is something like looking at something with foggy opera glasses. He should be able to see everything with great clarity and great reality and so forth. Well, you won't find very many step ones doing that. Of course, there is this kind of a phenomenon that sooner or later you will hit in somebody, someplace, where you say, be 3 feet back of your head, and the fellow immediately goes on exteriorizing on a concatenation from all available universes and disappears. But this is... he just exteriorizes into the universe from the universes in proper order and goes away. But we'll take this case and just sort of... put it up there as a school case. This doesn't happen outside of a lecture. And recognize that any preacher who's having any difficulty at all with his case is having a problem in havingness. And he's having a problem in havingness because he's having a problem in universes.